KNUS. Russ Baker is with us. His book was Family of Secrets. Russ, it's a real honor always when you do the radio show, so I want to say that first, and thanks for doing this, and welcome back to Denver.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
Yeah, I'd like you to just do a bio. I'm sure there are some people that don't know who you are and the work that you've done, and then we're going to talk about 60 Minutes. So if you would.
Sure. So I'm an investigative journalist, worked on staff and independently for a large number of American and international news organizations around the world, and focused in part on stories related to national security. I founded an organization called Who, What, Why. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, non-commercial, investigative and analytical news site, whowhatwhy.org. And I run that, and I also wrote the book, as you mentioned, Family of Secrets, which is nominally about the Bush family, but really is about 50 years of hidden American history and the influences and forces that have shaped our country's trajectory in ways that have not been formally or officially acknowledged.
Most recently, Neil Bush has turned up on the Ted Cruz staff. What do you do with that?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because a number of members of the Bush family were involved in the collapse of various savings and loans during that particular crisis. Neil Bush, key among them. These are people who used their links to their father or their brother when they were presidents and who got most of their opportunities to make money through that. And there are other interesting connections. Neil Bush is friendly with the family of John Hinckley. John Hinckley famously shot Ronald Reagan, and had Ronald Reagan died, the new president would have been Neil Bush's father, George H.W. Bush. These are just presumably coincidences.
They're having dinner together that night.
The brother of Hinckley and Neil Bush. Just all these kind of fascinating, odd coincidences one runs into.
Let me jump to 60 Minutes. We have talked before, and it's been really limited, not you, but the amount of people who are taking interest in this suppressed 28 pages. And on Sunday night, I started getting email on Saturday evening from people that are friends across the country who have been involved in the struggle. Peter, gear up, get ready, gear up, get ready. Finally, somebody's going to take a hard look at it. Steve Croft and that team, and they did the 28 pages. It aired Sunday night on 60 Minutes. We haven't spoken, so I don't know if you saw that piece or not.
I did see the piece. I'm going back and watching it again. I'm looking for very, very small things in the statements being made in there. And I tend to screen something like that about 10 times before I really begin to move on my end.
By the way, Megyn Kelly had Bob Graham on last night talking about it as well. So that's all encouraging. I've watched it three times. George Bush's name came up once, and that was it in the beginning. And they never came back to it. Who suppressed the 28 pages?
Well, that's an interesting question. Of course, when you watch this, and I've talked to Bob Graham, and on whowhatwhy.org, we actually ran an article about Graham, and maybe we can talk about that, and how the FBI personally, essentially, sort of threatened him over this. And I'd like to tie it, by the way, into the Boston Marathon bombing, because I think all of these things are connected. But in any case, it was the according to these people, according to Porter Goss, who was with the CIA himself, and then was on the 9/11 commission, was a co-chair. He says the same thing, that the FBI told them that the thing had to be suppressed, and when they asked why, they said, because we said so.
Because we said so. That's
a very, very interesting statement, of course, because it begins to raise questions as to what is the FBI, who dictates to the FBI what it does, or does the FBI dictate to the rest of the U.S. government what it does?
And I saw that as well, but Graham has said that it was George Bush, Dick Cheney, and the administration that ordered the suppression. And I was surprised to see the answer of the FBI. That was surprising.
Well, it's right. And so the missing link there is, who does the FBI answer to? Mm-hmm. And presumably, unless it's shown to be otherwise, they are being told what to do by the White House.
Precisely. I mean, for all the money and what's behind the curtain, is there any doubt in your mind that Bush-Cheney or Cheney-Bush ordered the suppression?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you have to remember that when they were interviewed themselves, Bush would not even answer any questions unless Cheney was present with him. And, you know, that in itself, you see, why is it that these things are not made into bigger deals? I mean, all of the concentrated might of the media, 60 Minutes and Fox News, Megyn Kelly, those kind of people, they could have all focused on how does a president manage to not talk about one of the biggest events in the history of the country and what he knows about it without having essentially a babysitter. I mean, that's astonishing.
But that's who they always were. I mean, that's the point of believing that George Bush was the true leader of the country during those 8 years and during that time. And he wasn't. It was Rumsfeld. It was, and this is from my reading and my listening, it was Rumsfeld. It was Cheney. It was Wolfowitz. It was Card. Those were the guys that were precisely telling him what to do. Do you doubt that, Russ?
I don't doubt that. These things are even more complicated. Some of the work that was done years ago by Fletcher Prouty.
Oh, sure. I know Fletcher Prouty. Yeah.
Right. And Fletcher Prouty, who was a member of the military, who served in a key position as a liaison with the Central Intelligence Agency for years. He used to talk about what he called the secret team, the notion of people throughout the national security apparatus who had a shared mindset and who were able to sort of affect policy. And this is where you get into, you know, what Peter Dale Scott calls the deep state, this idea of how these sentiments are arrived at, because more and more I've been taking a hard look at Dick Cheney and realizing the extent to which he himself was never really the, if you want to say, the kind of mastermind of things that people would think they are. My sense is the way that a lot of these things happen is that there a consensus is arrived at, and I think this Saudi story is very, very complicated. You know, one of the key pieces of this, I believe, is a story that we did at whowhatwhy.org. If you go to our site, we have links to that story, which we ran a number of years ago. And this is a related piece. I mean, I don't know how much time we have here, but we should probably, Peter, and I know you're so very well-versed, more than, frankly, any radio host in this stuff, is to talk about the piece that they discuss on 60 Minutes. They focus on the San Diego connection.
Well, that's the San Diego LA connection, yes.
Yes, which is very important. And in our piece, we focus on the Sarasota.
That's the one, you know,
from one coast to the other.
If I could pause and reset, you're listening to the one and only Russ Baker. We're talking about 60 Minutes. There were two things, and they, you know, the family that escapes and they find the food on the table, and it's right by the airport, and they knew Muhammad Atta. That was never brought up in 60 Minutes. The other one that wasn't brought up was the flights. And we know that Prince Bandar goes to, and it's recorded, sits on what's called, and I brought this up yesterday, the Truman Balcony. And he sits there with George W. Bush, and they concoct this plan to get God only knows who out of this country and God knows how many flights, and they got him up and out of the country. And that was not in the 60 Minutes piece as well, and the Florida connection. So I turn it over to you. Talk about the Florida connection.
The Florida connection was an important piece of that was brought out by other journalists for whom I have good regard, and one of them was working on a book about 9/11. The book did not go that far in terms of what it established or speculated or anything else, but the author is a solid guy, Tony Summers, and
I know, actually, there's another guy I know and respect, Anthony Summers.
That's right, and so he had developed some information that he felt he hadn't developed solidly enough or far enough to put into his book. So when the book was done, he contacted another fellow who in Florida and. Former newspaper journalist whom I know, also a solid guy, and said, hey, maybe we got to run this thing down. And what they did was they had heard that something had happened around 9/11 in Sarasota, Florida, on the west coast of Florida. And so they decided to see what they could find about this. And basically people living in a gated community in Sarasota had noticed shortly after 9/11, when it became clear that the majority of the hijackers were Saudis, and it was became known that some of them had trained in Florida, including in that general area, they noticed that their neighbors, who were devout Saudis, they hadn't seen them for a while. Now, of course, you have to be careful about that, not to scapegoat people, but they just sort of noticed that right around the same time that these people just had sort of vanished, and they brought that to the attention of authorities, who brought it to the attention of the FBI, and the FBI had apparently swarmed that facility and been in and out of the house and taken things in and out and so forth. So they looked into this thing, and basically what they discovered was that the FBI, in an internal document, had concluded that this family had links to the several of the alleged hijackers, including the alleged ringleader, Mohammed Atta, that these people had actually been going to their house and visiting the house, going through the gate. They were, you know, at the gate, you've got to show identification and you've got your license plate, and they knew who they were, and they did some triangulation with phone records, and they found links between this house and a number of the hijackers. Now, with the California connection, you have a similar thing where you've got a Saudi diplomat and a person who's a ghost employee of a major Saudi aviation company, both interacting with these people who then would end up being hijackers. In Sarasota, you have a similar thing, but this time you've got an actual house that they're visiting. And the man who owned this house, and here's where my group, whowhatwhy.org, comes in, is we then did the next piece of reporting, was who were the people who owned the house. And what we discovered through extensive investigation was that the man who owned the house was the president, CEO of a major Saudi company. That company was involved in transportation services and other activities that gave it reason to operate around the world. Of course, those are the kind of things that are typically used for as intelligence cover. And what is very significant is that that man, his boss, the chairman of his company, was a very powerful Saudi man who was essentially the head of aviation in Saudi Arabia. And so what you have is you have aviation in the San Diego and L.A. story, and you have aviation in the East Coast story, and you have all these guys trained in aviation, and they're the ones who supposedly run the planes into all those buildings. Now, as you point out, that program did not go the whole way, but to be fair about it, I mean,
I thought it was great.
I thought it was great.
I did.
To be fair,
really
in our piece, we focus on our angle, meaning what we developed. And, of course, you know, it's important to put these pieces together. Now, what I've seen happening, Peter, in the greater stratosphere is that because there is so much theorizing about what 9/11 was, and because we know that people justifiably look at the way that those buildings came down, look at other pieces of what they've heard and what they've seen, people have different speculations. They want to say it was this country or this group or this person and not this other one. And we've noticed that this Saudi material that we've developed and that others have developed gets ignored and gets poo-pooed.
Sure.
We always have people coming on our site posting comments saying this is a distraction. Yeah. The real story is something else. Well, it may be that this is part of something else, but it's not a distraction. I do not believe for a second that Bob Graham is anything other than an honorable person.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think all of these guys really, you know, you look at the program, you know, Bob Carey and, you know,
I'm on your
Porter
side.
Porter Goss. I mean, yeah. You know, all these people, you know, you see Tim Romer, a former congressman, Democrats, Republicans alike, liberals, conservatives, whatever you want to call them, and they all doing the best that they can, which I think is, by the way, generally true of people in government. I know there's this constant effort to vilify government. I don't share that. I think people are people. The same person you like who's a football coach who then runs for office is still the same person. Mm-hmm. Now, they do face certain kind of constraints, but I think they do often the best that they can. And the problem here is the system.
But here's, and, but if I can interrupt again, this is Russ Baker. He did Family of Secrets, investigative reporter. I'm a huge fan. He's got a short amount of time with us this morning. If you missed 60 Minutes, for the first time it breaks surface on the 28 pages that was suppressed by George Bush, Dick Cheney. And I'm told that Megyn Kelly did it, had Bob Graham on last night, which is a huge home run. I'll get a chance to see it before the end of the day. The attack, and there's a line that goes like this. The Japanese on December the 7th, 41, attack Pearl Harbor. The next day, FDR invades Mexico. I saw in the tragedy of this, I saw some polling data that was done on the young men and women in the military after right at the invasion of Iraq. And by the way, they withheld the 9/11 Commission report until after Bush launches his invasion. Over 95% of those young men and women, when asked why they're there, is to get even for what Saddam did on 9/11. It's a lie. True or false?
I'm sorry, you lost me on that last.
Yeah, they did polling. I've seen polling that was done on young men and women in the military.
Right.
On the invasion of Iraq, when asked why, they said they were getting even for what Saddam Hussein did to the United States on 9/11.
I see. Yeah, this is, if you think what a tragedy it is that the people who are devoting their entire lives, and I mean their lives, because they can lose their limbs, they can lose their lives, and they're killing other people, don't even understand what they do or why. And, you know, you think about what a tragedy that is, and there are a whole lot of things. We could have to do a whole separate program on that, but think about that if those people don't know what's going on, and I'm sure you've seen the polls where they ask Americans, and certainly polls still show, at least among Republicans, that a very large segment, maybe even a majority, still believe
it. No, I hear from them constantly. Yeah, they say horrible things to me and about me because of doing shows like this, and it's gone on. It's starting up this morning as well. And I got big shoulders. The truth will out. There's a great line that says time is a great enemy of a lie. And the lie was told. The books now are dropping left and right. There's a new book right after 9/11. And they talk about Rumsfeld 5 or 6 hours after the attacks, saying my interest is to hit Saddam. He's telling people this in meetings, recorded meetings. Bush was told that there was no evidence, there were no WMDs, there were no terrorist camps. It did not matter to those people. They were going
very
after...
Very important piece of this, Peter, on who, why we have a video with General Wesley Clark, the former commander of NATO. And Clark says that right after 9/11, he was at the Pentagon, and he was shown a top-secret memo that said that there was a plan to attack or invade 7 Middle Eastern countries, and he was stunned by that. And in another video we have up there, he says it's all about oil. Now, here's the man who was representing the United States in one of the most important international military positions, would have been on, you know, Fox News, would have been on all these programs in his official capacity when he's no longer in power, and he says this stunning thing to really explain all of this. Nobody covers it.
Can you stay through a break? I got to hit a break, and I know that you're limited.
Sure.
Can you stay?
Yeah.
Thanks, Russ Baker. That's good stuff. Thank you. And only, and this is really great. Russ Baker is with us, kind enough to stay. We were talking about Sunday night, 60 Minutes. Does a report on these top-secret documents that no one is allowed to see. And about the 28 pages, the entire 9/11 Commission report was 838 pages, and the joint inquiry is about the 9/11 attacks. And then they step in and they suppress 28 pages. You know, and I've talked to Bob Graham privately 3 or 4 times, on air 6 times, other people who have read the papers, and they say to me, and they've all been men of their word. They've not said at all what they saw, but they would say things like, every page totally changes your opinion of what happened on 9/11. So I realize this is a fluke or a weird question, but Russ, if we were able to read those pages, what do you think we would see?
Well, the best sense that I can get as somebody who has not read them is pretty much what I think 60 Minutes conveyed, although they did it in that very, very narrow way. And for a corporate news organization, I think it's gutsy what they did, and they had to be incredibly laser-like. But I think that what we see is this notion that many people in the Saudi apparatus, not just the ones mentioned in the report, but others, the ones that I just talked about earlier with regard to Sarasota, and I believe there were more seated throughout the Saudi government who, for whatever reason, were enthusiasts and supporters of terrorism. Now, that, of course, then raises the question, I mean, are these people traitors to their own country and their own government? And if so, why are they not cracked down on? And that's what I don't hear discussed, not on 60 Minutes, not anywhere, is what are we really looking at here? And then, of course, the larger question is if Saudi Arabia is tolerating this kind of thing, then why? And why is the U.S. government tolerating Saudi Arabia tolerating it? Right. I mean, you know, Peter, as you know, I mean, one of our themes in our reporting at whowhatwhy.org is that the terrorism itself is almost a necessity for the continuation of this vast money-making machine called the military-industrial complex.
I mean, I come to some conclusions, like you do. The Dick Cheney and George Bush told they had two mantras. WMDs and terrorist camps were Saddam Hussein's regime was training jihadis for Osama bin Laden. Nothing could be further from the truth. They hated each other. Many books that I've read suggest that Saddam Hussein was probably good for, you know, the number varies for how many thousands of jihadis or religious fanatics he ordered killed, whether they were Shia or Sunni. He was locked in a death struggle with what was going on with the mullahs in Iran, numbers of people. But there is no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the attack, with the attack of 9/11. No evidence. So
that's right. I mean, there was a concerted effort to vilify all of these people with these Baathist, whatever you want to call them, secular.
They were Baathist. No, they were Baathist. Yeah.
Quasi-socialist types of regimes, whether it was Saddam or the Assads, and I know you're expert on that, or Gaddafi, that there was a long-standing plan to knock out these sort of independent actors in the Middle East. There were many, many different reasons. Some of it had to do with, in the case of an Assad, unlike Saddam, was because he was an ally of Iran. I mean, there are many, many reasons. There were pipeline, natural gas pipeline issues. There were a whole host of different things. And I think what I was talking about earlier, how this consensus is arrived at, is people may arrive at a consensus, but they may not have the same motivations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that that's key. And certainly, of course, as we've seen, the destabilization of the removal of Saddam, of Gaddafi, and the attempted removal of Assad has plunged the region into chaos, resulted in the rise of the Islamic State and so forth. And now we look, and of course now we've got Hillary Clinton running for president, claiming that she is much better qualified than Bernie Sanders. Sanders says we shouldn't be in any of those places. Mm-hmm. He even in one debate really started kind of going into the sort of territory that you and I are going into, and I'm sure his advisors would like him to stop because people don't understand this stuff, but he started a bit. She's being routinely described by the media as well qualified because she was Secretary of State, yeah, in spite of the fact that she has been so avid in supporting more of these same kind of things, and that's where you see that continuum. I mean, I think that's one of the themes in my book, Family of Secrets, is that the Bush family disaster can be seen in a larger context, which is that they, to some extent, the Clintons and others who will not buck this system are very much a continuity, and it involves both parties.
There are new books that we're talking about, interrogation. I know the waterboarding has come back up again. And there are people that come forward, and, I mean, high-ranking officials that say Rumsfeld and Cheney demanded that interrogators find evidence of al-Qaeda collaboration or al-Qaeda Iraqi collaboration. So in 2002, Cheney and Rumsfeld were demanding proof of the links between al-Qaeda and Iraq. And also in the middle of this is Chalabi, Ahmad Chalabi. And Chalabi tells these guys, oh, they're there. So they take Abu Zayeb and they take Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who I'm not defending, but they waterboard them. I think Khalid was waterboarded 180 times. Eventually, people, and they came up empty, and they were told by Cheney and Rumsfeld, push harder. And eventually, as we know from torture, people will tell you what you want to hear to have it stopped. And there are people in books like The 500 Days who said they beat them into, in these black prisons, they beat them into telling them what they wanted to hear, and George Bush and Dick Cheney used those things. There's a reason why the French stay out of that war. There's a reason why lots of people stay out of that war. The French tell them this whole yellow cake story is a lie.
Yeah, and of course, this goes back to the still very secret energy task force that Cheney convened right away when they came into power. And this, we have to remember, was before 9/11, where we don't know too much about what they do, but we do know that they had maps, and they went and looked at the maps, and they talked to the oil companies, and they said, where do you want to be? And, of course, we know where those places were. And this goes back to the Project for a New American Century. I mean, the big unspoken thing here, and I understand that, is United States, the machine that we are all part of, our addiction to driving gas guzzlers and needing all kinds of motorized vehicles that, of course, we don't really need. To me, and we may disagree on this, but to me, the denial of climate change and the denial of the need to change our lifestyles and to not waste, Americans waste much more on all of these things than practically anybody else in the world, and we don't want to stop, but there's a cost for this addiction, and that cost is that all this fuel has to come from somewhere. And so because that's the way our economy runs, there is a mandate that finding and grabbing this stuff anywhere in the world is the essence of national security. And that is, I think, the story here. That's the story of the tolerance of the Saudis. It's the story of the black prisons. The story of all the things you're just talking about.
I mean, and this stuff, and the more I seep into it, the more frightened I get. But this Libyan guy, remember El-Libi, El-Sheikh El-Libi? And he claimed that there was a link between Saddam, al-Qaeda, and WMDs. And we know, I mean, the guy, there was no way the guy could have had any knowledge of any of these things. And I listen to radio shows, and they bring up El-Libi. Now, there are people that knew El-Libi was lying, and they were marginalized claims. And the Bush administration, by the way, there's the one guy in the 9/11 Commission report, they say, He was tortured until he signed a confession that he was never even allowed to read the confession that he signed. And these things they go on to Cheney, they go on to Rumsfeld, they go on to Carr, and eventually, even George Tenet, who I just have lost all my respect for. And Tenet's come out and said, Cheney and company, they wanted to invade Iraq long before 9/11. They said they were looking for, and he called it crap, that Cheney and Rumsfeld came up with for justification for invading Iraq. George Senate called it crap.
Yeah, and as you may remember, in my book Family of Secrets, I broke the story from George W. Bush's own advisor, co-author of a book and a section of a book that never came out, where this co-author asked Bush, as a candidate in 1999, a candidate for president, what do you want to do if you're elected president? Bush had almost no ideas at all. And the one thing he finally came up with was that he was going to invade Iraq.
Yeah.
And he said, the co-author said, why do you want to do that? And he said, you know, I became convinced as an advisor to my father, and I saw Margaret Thatcher and Britain when they invaded these tiny, basically undefended Falklands off of Argentina. He said, I saw the tremendous response in Britain and the pride and the parades and people throwing flowers at her. And he said, you know, there's no question. If you're a commander-in-chief, you've got to have a war because that is the key to your ratings.
But why, last question, I know you stayed way beyond the time you allotted. Russ Baker's with his Family of Secrets. We're talking about what 60 Minutes did, and apparently Megyn Kelly had Bob Graham on last night. How soon before the story really breaks surface and somebody other than some book writer and some idiot radio guy, and I think it's close, when people are going to come to the realization. I mean, these guys, although Cheney has never done it, Bush really kind of has admitted there were no WMDs. He won't talk about the terror camps. They weren't there, but he's come close to say, we never found them, which is nonsense because they weren't there. But having said that, how long before this thing really breaks surface and people really truly look at what happened?
It's hard to say, Peter. When I started whowhatwhy.org some years ago, people were really dismissing these types of things, the types of things we're talking about, writing about. I know you've had the same experience. I sense a sea change going on. I see that the same people who wanted to label us kooks aren't doing that anymore. We're getting more invitations. It's still a slow process. I'm not saying it's happening overnight, but since we began, you had Edward Snowden came forward. I know you're going to be talking about the Panama Papers, WikiLeaks, all of these things. There is a movement afoot in the land. The people are arising, and I'm very excited about the near term and certainly the long term in terms of this. In other areas, I'm much bleaker, particularly climate change. But I am hopeful that there's an exciting moment at hand.
Thank you for everything. Thank you for the books. Thank you for all your appearances and. Russ will talk as soon as possible again, but really with honor, man. Thank you for doing our radio show this morning. Take care of yourself.
You too. Thanks.
Russ Baker.